Welcome to the second episode of Polititeen. Today is June 3rd. Watch as Varun and me discuss topics from Tom Cotton's New York Times op-ed to the Blackout Tuesday movement. And as always, be sure to stick to the end for updates.
The Minneapolis Attorney General has raised the charges on Derek Chauvin from third degree murder to second degree murder, which I believe is completely justified for the actions that he did. And also, we have seen that he promised to charge the other three officers who were witnessing the incident and not doing anything with aiding and abetting murder, which, again, I believe is very justified.
The Minneapolis Attorney General has raised the charges on Derek Chauvin from third degree.
Is that my stream or is that, yeah, sorry. I had an overlap of the stream playing. I wanted to talk about the fact that the case is obviously still ongoing. I think that this is exactly where the charges should be. Me and Varun both come from legal standpoints. Obviously, I don't think you guys, any outside viewers wouldn't know that, but we're developing an extensive knowledge in the legal services pathway, and we both hope to go into that pathway in the future. But I think that this is a very good place for the charges to be. I think third degree would be letting this off the leash. I don't think that would be fair. I don't think that it was an accident by any means. I think first degree would be too hard to prove that it was premeditated. And on top of that, you would need a grand jury to decide that it was premeditated. So that would just go... it would be more extensive and it would be a longer trial process to prove something that would be harder to even say that it definitely was premeditated. I think second degree is the way to go. I think it wasn't premeditated. I think that it definitely happened in the events. I think it was negligent. I think it was criminal negligent. I think criminally negligent. And I think that the officers that were there with him definitely could have done something to stop him, which is why I think that the aiding and abetting definitely fits in there too. What do you think, Varun?
Right, and I'm glad you brought in our legal background is there because we have joined this podcast to kind of increase our awareness and our knowledge about these kinds of issues from that background. And Damien, I agree. I think that second degree murder is very, very descriptive of what occurred that day. It was reckless conduct. It was reckless conduct. It was an obvious lack of concern for human life, which is one of the defensive properties of second-degree murder. So I think that it is a valid charge against the accused. And I agree. I think it brings justice to the issue at hand, but not the overbearing issue here, Damien, which is this discrimination which is occurring in the United States and has been occurring for the past couple of decades, and for the history of America, for that matter. I think it's important to bring light to the article, which was published by the New York Times in a fashion that I don't agree with, by Tom Cotton, one of our Republican senators today. How do you feel about that, Damien?
I thought at first when I was reading the article, I genuinely thought that it sounded like this article wasn't exactly meant to be taken seriously. I mean, it just doesn't seem like an article that would be written within the political atmosphere that we're in right now.
You know what? Again, I have to agree. And I think that we're on the same stage here. I think that Tom Cotton was completely distracting from the bigger problem here, which is the oppression of minorities in our nation, especially African Americans, our African American minority. I think he is trying to distract our nation from those issues onto a few people who are rioting in our nation, which I'm not saying I validate that, but I think that it is showing our nation that we need to change the way that we govern the people, and we shouldn't distract away from the issue at hand. That discrimination is widespread and racism is widespread. Systematic racism is widespread, and that is something we should from with articles like these. I think on behalf of Polititeen, I would like to just tell the New York Times that articles like these should not be published. Whoever your editor is, they should not be published because that is completely diminutive and not fair to our African American community.
I want to talk about his quote that titles the episode today, at least at the time that this live stream is happening, you know, the title episode being an overwhelming show of force. I think that it's almost ironic to call for an overwhelming show of force because of the fact that obviously, you know, police brutality is exactly that. It's an overwhelming show of force. It's exaggerated. It's an abuse of power, which is almost what's being called for in this article. I don't know how you necessarily feel about that, Vroom, but it feels almost ironic.
I completely agree. I didn't think of it that way, but I see what you're saying. And I think that, backpacking off of your point, I think that depression in our nation is bound to just cause more division. We have seen our president and our government suppress people for centuries. They've been suppressing people for the past couple of days, and I think that it has not done anything but increase the amount of tension and the amount of discontent that people have seen within our nation. One of our last tweets has been, suppression does not cause change. Suppress more discontent, and what Tom Cotton is saying is add more suppression. I don't think that's the way.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. Honestly, I don't think that adding suppression to an issue that deals with people being suppressed is the right way to, well, both suppressed and oppressed. I don't think that it's necessarily the way to go. We talked about it, you know, on the last episode. We don't want to get too deep into that, but definitely go check out the last episode if you haven't. But we talked about basically how I brought up a point that maybe showing force isn't exactly the right thing to do right now because it can incite violence onto both police officers and onto the protesters there. An interesting point that I saw Tom Cotton bring up in this article, Varun, was he said, you know, he mentioned death of police officers and of business owners. Obviously, you know, not to be like, that's not to say that that's not wrong. I mean, that's completely wrong. Any right. death is wrong, but I don't think that it's fair to mention their death, talking about deaths of protesters too, who have died at the hands of police officers. I mean, it's going both ways here, and this is a problem in America, and I don't think that we should try to blindside each other. I think that we need to, again, going back on last episode, I don't want to go back down that rabbit hole, but I don't think that you know, hiding things and trying to trick each other is the exact thing to do right now. And I think that by just mentioning one side's death, it's wrong. I think that we should talk about both sides' death, both the police officers who are dying, unfortunately, and the protesters who are losing their lives, the business owners who are losing their lives. I think that that's the only way that we can work. What do you think, Vroom?
I think he was deliberate in talking about those issues. I think he was deliberately trying to distract the American people from the issues at hand and giving them something else, a smokescreen, in my words, for the real crisis at hand, to just persuade people to think about something else and not focus upon the issues that are gripping America. And doing that is completely ignorant. And it is self-motivated and self-centered, I think. And I'm very emotional on this topic.
Yeah. Again, I think it's playing politics. But to move on from this point, obviously a very upsetting point, a very hard-hitting point. But even as hard-hitting and upsetting as it was, that wasn't even one of the biggest news developments that happened today. Again, June 3rd, we had Drew Brees come out with a statement that was disgusting. You know, I can't speak on exactly what his intentions were with the statement, but it was a very uncomfortable statement to have listened to.
It was, Damien, and I think that Drew Brees was talking about how he doesn't stand for any people disrespecting the flag of the United States, and that the flag is a symbol of unity and national equality and unity. And I think that he was missing one of the biggest points of what is occurring. Number one, the people are disrespecting the flag because they want to show their support for a movement that has not gone recognized for the past couple of decades. And number two, that unity is only achieved with equality and not because we have a flag standing there. That flag needs to be supported by an equal government that is fighting. Thoughts on this?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I understand what he's saying. I think that he was trying to call for unity in his own unique way. I think that you can definitely say that it's misinterpreted. I'm playing the devil's advocate here, but I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say that he was, well, I was going to give him the benefit of the doubt because there's a later development that you guys would be interested in hearing about, but you know, it sounded like maybe he was just trying to call for unity, and you know, this, he's a quarterback. He's not a politician. So for him to come out with a statement, you know, and he's trying, you have to respect the fact that he was trying. I think that you have to give him that benefit of the doubt, that he was definitely trying to bring unity. I think he did it in the wrong way. I think that he disrespected this movement. Whether that was intentional or not, he definitely did it. What are your thoughts, Rune, on well, you were saying, actually, as a matter of fact, you were saying that that, you know, the flag has to stand for something, and I don't think that if you're kneeling, you're disrespecting the flag. I think that you're just saying that, you know, this flag isn't necessarily representing me. Why should I stand for it?
But I think that as people, we have to, and I'm not saying that we should disrespect the flag. I think that as people, we have to make our decisions on the issues that we have our country facing and say, do I support what is going on? And how am I going to support and show my support or my non-support? I think the people who are disrespecting the flag are not doing it to diss America. Yeah. I think they are doing it to make a statement about how their issues have gone unrecognized. And I want to talk about that second development in the Drew Brees series. Yeah. Would you like to talk about that, Danny?
Yeah, it's an interesting development. We can both hit on it a little bit. But basically, it's not to misquote him, but he said something along the lines of, I'm not racist. If I was racist, I wouldn't have thrown all those touchdown passes to black players. You can correct me if I'm wrong.
You know what? I think, Damien, that, and I was talking to you about it over text before, yeah, earlier today, that it is a staple of what racist people and what white supremacists in our nation, people with systemic racism within them, are saying today. You know, I'm not racist because I have black friends.
Yeah.
No, that is not true. I think that he is completely just copying what that rhetoric is and using it on the national stage. And I don't stand all for that quarterback today.
Yeah, I agree with you. Joyner Lucas, in one of his songs, he says something along the lines of, he's playing the devil. He's playing two sides of the coin. You know, he's being at the table in one of his verses, and in the other one of his verses, he's being the person that's being perceived as racist. And when he's in the verse of the racist, he says, "I'm not racist. My little sister's brother's boyfriend, something along the lines, goes on all these people and says has a sister whose cousin's black." You know, it's like they try to create parallels and say that I'm equated with someone that's African American, therefore I can't be racist. And I think that that's not necessarily the smartest card to play right now. I think it's a very dumb card to play, rather. But again, I don't want to misconstrue Drew's intentions. I think it, from the way that I'm reading it, again, I have always had respect for Drew Brees, even though he's an Atlanta Falcons rival. But I've always had respect for him. But from the way that I'm reading it, I feel like he's just making mistakes on mistakes. But sometimes, you know, some mistakes you just can't let go of. And these, we're going to have to see how these mistakes turn out. It's just, it's still developing. We're going to have to see. You know, his teammates are very mad at him. His teammates are upset with him. What do you think, Varun?
I think words, they have a significance in today's world. Words that you post online, words that you speak, especially coming from our president. And on the topic of words, I wanted to shift our discussion over to the quote and the actual discourse of James Mattis, who was the former defense secretary who resigned over Trump's response to Syria in his policy, and spoke out today and condemned his usage of words and rhetoric and usage of the military to divide America in his own words. And going back on this point, you know, James Mattis, he was the person after he resigned, he was like, no, I'm not going to speak out against President Trump because I want the military to be okay in supporting him because that is our duty as military men. And he said, my silence is not eternal. And that's a quote. I will come back and I will make my thoughts heard on the national scale. And Damien, Mr. Mattis has done it today. What do you think about that?
I think that he couldn't have chosen a better time to done it, to do it. Sorry. He couldn't have chosen a better time to do it. I think that, you know, it was an unfortunate development at the time. You had Donald Trump saying, correct me if I'm wrong again, I think he said, like, he wasn't that great of a general anyway, or something along the lines, referring to General Mattis. I think it's the correct way to play politics. I think he's doing this correctly. I don't know exactly, you know, what the counter argument to this would be. I guess it would be saying that, you know, he's a general and that he shouldn't go against the president. But I think that, you know, once you're fired, I worry. My only genuine worry here is that people are going to come out and say that he's doing it because he's petty, and that they're going to coin him as petty, which I think is just gross because, I mean, it's not a kid's game anymore. It's not about being petty. You're playing with people's lives here. What do you think, Bruno? Do you think that people could really, like, coin him as petty because of him coming out and speaking against Donald Trump?
You know what? I don't think it's valid. People might do it, but I don't think it's valid.
Yeah,
because
I think that's the best way to put it.
James Mattis held his silence out of respect for the United States of America for so long, and for him to come out about these kinds of issues takes a lot of persuading. And I think that Trump being downed by somebody else in the government has the same response every single time. When John McCain said something bad about him, disrespected him, Trump came out and said, you know what, John McCain was caught in a war. He's a prisoner of war. He did this service to America. You know, John McCain fought for our nation.
Yeah.
Just as James Mattis fought for our nation. Mm-hmm. And just because somebody doesn't like you, Mr. President, you should not come out and disrespect them for their words and demean their free speech.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think that this is actually turning out to be an interesting development, not just in the sense of, you know, General Mattis's quote, but you mentioning John McCain and stuff actually talking about the fact that, you know, when someone would speak out against Donald Trump before, it was kind of scary, and especially if you were a Republican, almost political suicide, because, you know, they'd say Donald Trump wouldn't endorse you, and then Mitch McConnell wouldn't endorse you, and then if everyone else wouldn't go out and talk negatively about you, Donald Trump would threaten them. But you kind of see the tables turning here a little bit. I don't know if you're noticing it, Varun, but, you know, you had Greg Popovich come out the other day. You had Taylor Swift come out. You're having all these celebrities and all these political figures coming out, and, you know, George Bush, Barack Obama, you're having people that are starting to say some things about Donald Trump that, if I were in his position, would start to get me worried about November.
You know what? I agree, and I think it brings it back to a point. Personally, I went on our Twitter on Polititeen Podcast. It's at Polititeen Show. I went on our Twitter last night at like 12:04 a.m. In Illinois, and I went on our Twitter and followed a bunch of accounts. I'm going to read them out to you today. It's College Republicans for Biden, Republican Voters Against Trump, Republicans for the Rule of Law, Republicans for Joe Biden, all accounts that are Republicans on the right wing waking up and seeing what is happening in America and saying, I am done, you know, just going with my party on every single issue and sacrificing the integrity of our nation, the heart and soul of our nation, and I am going to stand up for what is right, which is just taking Donald Trump out of office.
Yeah, I think that it's an interesting development, though, because, you know, a couple months ago, you had Republicans that were extremely scared to speak out against Donald Trump. And, I mean, you can't blame them. They're trying to feed their families. I think that you should put America first. You know, if you're going to go into the game of politics, I think that you should come in to serve your country. I think General Mattis, to turn back onto the subject, he's doing that. He wasn't a politician, but he came in to serve his country, and Donald Trump prohibited him by doing that by firing him. So I think that this, he found this as a way fit to once again serve his country. He's making a statement. He's giving his opinion. He's not telling anyone else what to do. I think it's very professional. I'd like to see what Donald Trump's going to respond to this, and I'd like to see what type of backlash General Mattis is going to get from right-wing media.
Right. And speaking on one of your points about Republican senators keeping their silence and sticking to partisan lines because they want to keep their job, me and my dad were talking about Mitt Romney. And knowing Mitt Romney, he's one of the more centrist Republicans. He might be one of Biden's cabinet picks for a position. But Mitt Romney, he has been outspoken against Donald Trump on mm-hmm. many, many, many issues. And I think that the reason for that is that Mitt Romney has the means to where he can go without being in office and have a job and have enough money, he's a millionaire. You know, he can survive without his position. And I think, playing devil's advocate, a lot of these Republican senators do not have another source of income. And I think that they depend on their professions and that they are scared to talk up, as you're saying. And I think that when you come into that profession, you have to be ready to lay it all on the line because you're fighting for America. You're fighting for the heart and soul of our nation. And I think that trumps everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to my dad earlier, too. I was talking about how there was one Republican senator, I believe, that actually voted against Donald Trump in his impeachment. And, you know, at that time, it was looked at as political suicide, obviously, to say that Donald Trump should be impeached. But looking at it from a perspective now, it almost looks like that Republican senator might have just won his seat for years to come because he decided to stand up for someone who is now being looked at by the majority of the nation, including, once again, politicians, former generals, celebrities, as a coward and as someone that is disgracing our nation, in not my words, but the words of, once again, these politicians, these people who hold social platforms. What do you think about the senator that came out and said that Donald Trump should be impeached?
You know, interesting point, because that Republican senator, he was, in fact, Mitt Romney, the guy that I was talking about earlier. He was the one that came out and voted against Trump, and he wanted to impeach Trump on that vote. He was the only one. And you know, I think that he is setting a precedent to where senators will be rewarded for their actions if they speak with the rule of law in mind and with the heart and soul of our nation in mind. And I think that in the long run, I'm saying this from my own opinion, in the long run, when they speak the truth and they speak from their minds, they will be rewarded by an extra term or by citizen support, because we're seeing so many people just fed up, Damien, and frustrated about our nation. And I think that this cannot go unnoticed. And the tide is turning. We posted on our Instagram, our Twitter last night, saying the tide is turning. Many people are starting to recognize the issues at hand and starting to do something against them. I think that, you know, going back to Congress, we're going to see a tide turning the next time the Congress is in session.
Yeah. So I want to switch our focal point here to November. What do you think November is going to look like? Do you see a landslide victory coming for Joe Biden? Or do you see what happened in 2016 happening again, where we're like, oh, yeah, oh, whatever, Hillary's going to win. You know, Hillary's going to win by a landslide. And then you see Donald Trump coming back and sneaking another 4 years. Do you see that's plausible? Do you see a development happening before then? You know, some people were talking about the possibility that Donald Trump could be removed from office before then. I don't know how probable that is, but I've seen a couple people on Twitter saying that they'd like to see that happen, and I know a lot of Americans are disapproving of Donald Trump. What do you think November is planning to look like?
You know what? Interesting that you brought that up. One of the main trending hashtags on Twitter 2 days ago was hashtag 25th Amendment, calling upon people to advocate for Trump to be impeached based upon his actions on multiple accounts. But I think, going back to your point about November, I think people – I don't think it's fair that we underestimate Donald Trump.
Just to clarify, the 25th Amendment is the removing of the president. It's an amendment to when a president is unfit to serve, just so any viewers that weren't really sure where we were going with that.
Right. Thank you so much for clarifying that one. And I think that in November – we cannot underestimate President Trump, because as we did in 2016, that proved to be completely destroying of our party. Because Hillary wasn't campaigning as hard as she would have if she knew Trump had even a slight chance of winning that election. I think this year, Joe Biden and his forces and the Democratic Party has to unite under one flag. It doesn't matter if you're a Bernie supporter. It doesn't matter if you're a Warren supporter, or if you're a Yang supporter. We all have to unite under one flag. And that is what I see the Democratic Party doing. I'm seeing Bernie put his support behind Biden. Biden might not be the perfect candidate. I wasn't a big supporter of Biden until he won the primaries. But Biden is our candidate. And right now it's anybody but Trump. And I think for us to win the election in November, we have to realize that it is anybody against Trump. And we can't divide our party even more. We have a left-wing branch of the Democratic Party and a radical left-wing branch of the Democratic Party. We all have to come together and to become one troop and one group. What do you feel about that?
Yeah, you mentioned our party. Me being a centrist, I do tend to lean with the Democratic Party. I'm especially leaning with the Democratic Party now. But I find it interesting that you say, you know, our party, obviously talking about the Democratic Party. So that raises the question, is there anything Donald Trump could do for centrists like me, do you think, that could change what November will look like? Is he too deep now to go back? Could he fix something? What do you think would have to happen in order for, you know, you to stand back on your platform and for centrists to start to lean a little bit more right from now until November?
You know, Damien, I think that Donald Trump can go back on his mistakes. And I think he can gain the vote of a bunch of centrists and independents in our world today. It's never too late. But that starts with accepting the issues we have in society, as George W. Bush has done. And we'll talk about that later in today's podcast. But he has to accept the issues, and he has to, you know, have a united front against it. Because looking at the biggest crises we have had, whether it's or the coronavirus or the racial riots happening today, I think that it is the treatment that they have got is underserved, and it is not the right treatment. And if he does take these crises and does something about them within the next couple of months and rewrites his wrongs, I think he'd gain the vote of a bunch of supporters, because right now all he has in his pocket are the radical Republicans.
Yeah, his base. It's just his base.
No matter what.
It's interesting. It looks like he's just leaning into his base very hard, which makes November interesting to me. It looks like he's saying MAGA or die. It looks like it's MAGA or nothing. He's going for his base and he's pushing it hard, and it makes me wonder, how big is that base? You know, obviously the people that support, I don't think he could do anything to push away people who support him right now. I don't think that he could, like, you know, unless he, like, comes out and says, like, that he's getting rid of all guns or something. But I don't see anything probable happening where he loses his base. Because people that support him right now, he's kind of, you know, he's jumping off the deep end a little bit. And his supporters, as of right now, I don't see them going away. So you have to wonder, how big is that support pool? How many supporters are they? Are we underestimating America is really supporting Donald Trump, how strong his base really is? What do you think?
I think that in 2016, that Trump won the election simply because, and this is my opinion, don't feel obliged to agree with it, I think he won because Hillary Clinton was a very, very, very flawed candidate. You know, there was an undergoing investigation by the FBI on her during the election, which I don't care if it was true or not. Mm-hmm. What I care about is there was an investigation going on, mm-hmm. and that is a bad name for a presidential candidate. I think that's why we lost the Democratic Party. I'm saying lost the election in 2016. I see flaws. You know, he stuttered. He has a record of sexual misconduct in some circumstances. He is not the most radical and the most right.
Well, he has alleged sexual misconduct.
Alleged with sexual misconduct. I agree. I think that he has a record of not being on the right in many, many issues. But I think that Joe Biden is a much, much, much better candidate than Hillary Clinton. Well, because of that and that alone, he is going to triumph over Donald Trump.
Yeah. So I remember in 2016, it was people that were – it was you're voting, but there was also this huge base where it's like, I'm not going to vote. Like, these are two horrible candidates, so I'm just not going to vote. I remember hearing that a lot. You know, I'm not going to vote. I can't make a decision. And I also remember hearing it's like picking from the lesser of two evils. Right. You know, that was the conversation that I had a lot of times. It was like, oh, this is a hard decision. It's like between picking between someone that's bad and someone that's very bad. And you have to decide who that is. And I don't know if it's purposeful or if it's accidental. But now you have Donald Trump pushing the Department of Justice to open an investigation onto Biden and Obama. Because of, you know, the allegations with Michael Flynn, do you think that maybe he's trying to use that as a political strategy, trying to do again what happened with Hillary? Because, I mean, I don't know if you recall, but it was like before the election where you had James Comey come out and say that he was reopening the investigation and to be possibly the president in, I think, less than a week. Do you think that Donald Trump is trying to, like, play a political strategy here and try to make it once again the lesser of two evils?
I think, Damien, he's most definitely trying to do it. Because, you know, it worked the first time. What's to say it won't work again? I think he's trying to make people mad and trying to pin things on Joe Biden, which is a political strategy in and of itself. But I think the biggest thing that we need to focus on here is the fact that with our nation today, we had a lot of Democratic and Republican voters who were not mobilized back in 2016 to vote in the election, and voters in general. I think that with the race riots, with the coronavirus, and with Donald Trump's presidency in and of itself, I think the people are going to be motivated to vote and to use their voice and to use their voice on the national scale. We're seeing many hashtags today talking about, let's vote next year, vote Trump out of office. That is the way we're going to do this. That's the way we're going to fight for justice. And that is the way we're going to get Biden as our president over Trump, in my opinion. I think that people are very, very motivated to be in the election and to be a outspoken voice in that manner. What do you think about that?
I agree with you. I mean, since 2016, you've had this huge push of the word vote. I don't know. You know, Webster has your thing where you see the word popularity throughout the years. I wonder if there's going to be a significant surge in the word vote. There's been such a heavy push from it or for it, the use of it, going out and doing it since 2016. You know, you had Obama at the end say vote. You have all these high schools are even trying to get their students to sign up to vote. Different groups. You've had voting trending on Twitter within the past month on multiple occasions, whether it's vote Donald Trump out, vote Mitch McConnell out, vote in general, just vote. I think that it's a good push. I think that Americans should definitely exercise that right. I think that it's absolutely necessary in a democracy that your voice is heard. I think that that's the only way that we can all be fairly, that we can be fairly represented. The majority of us, that all of us can be fairly represented. If it's only the people that are going out and voting, it's not everyone in America being represented. Which leads to a question here, Bruin. Do you think that because of the whole coronavirus thing, so obviously liberals are saying, or people that are more liberal are staying at home and they're sitting inside and they're not trying, you know, they're trying to not go out. Do you think that maybe because of that, if the coronavirus, hopefully it won't, but coronavirus creeps into November, do you think that maybe some liberals won't vote and some conservatives will? Because conservatives, you know, obviously on the right side, you have people that don't care as much. You see right-wing candidates politicizing, not wearing a mask, not social distancing. They think it's a joke. And a lot of their constituents are following that. So do you think that maybe that's going to be a contributing factor onto the votes that we see in November?
You know, Damien, I think that the issues today are too big to dissuade somebody from going to the ballots and voting.
Yeah.
And that can be in masks, and it can be mail-in votes. And I know that we have an option for people to mail in votes now in district elections because of the coronavirus. People can mail in their votes.
Yeah.
Instead of going to ballot places and ballot stations to vote. So I think people are going to either utilize their options to virtually or mail in their votes, or actually wear a mask and go out, because the issues today, again, are too big, are too widespread for us to simply go out and be scared.
I think
that is real, and I think that we need to be scared to an extent. This is too big for us to stay at home for.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's what I was going to say. I think that Americans are going to prioritize here, and they're going to say, "Enough is enough. Enough is enough. We need to go out and vote, regardless of the risk." I think that, again, tides are turning, and it's interesting to see. And it's interesting to see how this is going to be written in history. And it's interesting to see how this is going to be remembered. The 45th president of the United States, how is he going to be remembered this November? How is it going to be remembered? Let's talk about then mail-in ballots.
I think that, on to your previous point, I think the health of our nation is more of a priority than my health.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's being American right there. That you're putting, you know, future generations, people that will outlive you, you're putting them in an opportunity to thrive. I think that that's maybe the most optimal thing that you can do. That's the most patriotic thing that you can do, is really go, hey, I, you know, this is a risk I'm willing to take because I want to see future Americans thrive.
Because you know what, we see people protesting, taking a risk to put themselves out there, and that's a bigger risk than having just going to the ballots. It's standing in front of these police officers and these supremacists and speaking their word, even though it may cause them to get hurt and to get tear gassed and to get flashbanged.
Yeah, so I wanted to move on to the topic of mail-in ballots. So how do you feel about mail-in ballots? What are your thoughts here? What are your concerns? What are we thinking here?
Damian, I think that they we'll just have to see how they work for district elections, because we have our August elections for district in Georgia, for district congresswoman and congressmen. I think based upon how they work there, we're going to see if there's fraud involved, if fraud is a possibility, and if it is a safe and if it is a accurate means of distributing information and vote.
Yeah, well, you were mentioning fraud. Obviously, you had Donald Trump's tweet get the fact checked. He got the fact check little tag. But recently, I don't know if you saw the John Oliver Last Week Tonight episode. He talks about the whole fraud thing, and he brings up a very interesting point of the trouble that you'd have to go through in order to commit mail fraud. Or to commit a voting fraud through mail. A lot of Republicans are talking about the fact that dead people haven't been taken off the registration list. I'm not going to exactly bring up the whole argument that John Oliver makes, but I definitely recommend that anyone watching, anyone who hasn't seen it already, go check it out. But basically, it's a big hassle in order for you to just get one vote. And obviously, every vote matters, but it's an interesting point that he brings up. I think that you bring up a good point. I think that maybe this is going to serve as a test run. I know a lot of people that are voting, you know, with their mail-in ballots. I think that it's a good thing. I am misinformed about mail-in ballots. I think that everyone should do their research. You know, mail-in ballots aren't a new thing. They're not 20 years old. They're not 50, 60 years old. If I'm not mistaken, they've been here since the Civil War. I mean, this isn't a new idea. So I think that it's maybe even a bit overdue. I think that this is a move that we should have made a long time ago.
I agree. And I think we should change the topic over to something different than the political stance we've been taking for the past couple of minutes. I think we should transfer it to the response of corporations and the highlighted discrimination in corporations today. How do you feel about Brandy Melville being discriminatory towards people of minority race, Asians, African Americans, and other people of those origin, and people who don't fit the mold of a skinny white girl?
Well, you know, I'm not particularly familiar with this case, but you know, I think, again, this is going to be something with me being centrist. I don't think that race should play a fact in it. I don't think that race should ever play a fact in anything. That's just in general. I think the only race that should matter is the human race. I think that that's, at the end of the day, that's it. I don't know what her stance is, but I'll give you mine. I think that we should never shame someone for how they look in terms of weight. Or how they're born is something that they can't control. But I think that we should definitely advocate for people to be healthier in America. I don't think that it's responsible, necessarily the stance that we're taking, where we're saying that obesity is beautiful. Obviously, people who are obese, you know, they can be beautiful people. They can be beautiful how they are. They can be happy how they are. But I don't think that it's a good thing to advocate for it. I think that we should advocate for health. I think that we should try to push the future youth into being healthier. Obviously, if you have, you know, an eating condition or you have some sort of problem where you gain weight excessively, then that's another thing. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about pre-existing conditions. I'm talking about people who are just in general saying that anyone that is obese, that it is okay per se. I don't agree with that. I think that we should be healthy. I think that we should push each other to be healthy. I don't think that we should shame each other. I definitely don't think that, but I think that we should try to push each other to be healthy. What do you think, Bruin?
I've been thinking about this, you know, Damien, for the past couple of weeks and the past couple of months, even before this whole situation went down, back into school, talking to my classmates. And I think that it's okay for us to bring up the topic that obesity is a condition.
Yeah.
It is a disease that Americans are facing. It is not something that's okay for us to do without any pre-existing conditions. We should strive to be healthier as American citizens. But I think the discrimination from brands like Brandy Melville and Urban Outfitters and the employment process based on race, weight, and anything like that is not okay whatsoever. I mean, if you go on our Twitter at Polititeen Show, I want you guys to follow us, to tweet at us over everything you see as red flag. But I think we posted something earlier today about a girl and a former employee of Brandy Melville who said that there was a person of Asian descent who pulled up to their place asking for her resume to be reviewed. And the manager, Damien, of the Brandy Melville, she immediately gave the resume with accomplishments, and she said, "What does that person look like?" And this employee, she said, she is I don't know, she described some of her personal attributes. She said, "What race is that person?" And this employee said, "Asian." And she immediately went, "No, we're not hiring. Tell her we're not hiring." I think that systemic racism stems from things like this. Corporations should be held accountable.
Yeah.
And it doesn't stop there.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think that even in terms of, you know, someone being obese, I don't think that should cost them a job opportunity. I mean, obviously, I think that as Americans, we should be reasonable. And if you're trying to, you know, you're going into a job that it's looking for like a model with a 00 waist and you're an obese model, I don't think that you should necessarily be offended if you get rejected for that job. But I don't think that if someone's advocating, they're just, you know, models for hire. They're looking for models. And you go and you apply and you get rejected just on the basis that you're obese, I think that that's wrong. I think that you shouldn't lose a job opportunity for it. I think rather you should be encouraged maybe to get the job opportunity and to change. You should have that company try to help you. Obviously, I'm not an expert in this, but I don't think that race is something that you just have to leave out of it. I don't think that asking for someone's race is appropriate. I think ever. You know, you have someone brought up the other day to me affirmative action and how, you know, colleges, they have to accept a certain number, or not a certain number per se, but a percentage. They can't discriminate against accepting Hispanic students. Hence, you have to put like your race on your resume or your race on what tests you're taking and stuff. But I think that it's kind of upsetting, you know? It's kind of upsetting to know, yeah, cool, I got accepted into so-and-so school, but is it just because I'm African-American? Is it just because I'm Latino? Is it just because I'm Hispanic? What do you think, Bruin?
I think that it is an issue we've been bleeding to talk about for months and for years. I think that affirmative action, Damien, is a good policy. Because looking back upon when it first was introduced, I think that it was needed. Because
yeah.
African Americans need to be educated, and they don't come from the right communities. And a lot of times they come from hoods and slums. And these places get a college education. And I think educating them in this platform is a good thing, and it does raise awareness.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. I think that it's an amazing thing. But I think it might be one of the saddest things to think that it has to, you know... Do you get what I'm saying here? Like, that it has to exist is kind of sad. That we can't just be like, everyone gets an equal opportunity. You get what I'm saying? It's kind of like this is, I guess this is the best way of putting it. The 15th Amendment, you know, everyone's treated equally under the law. It's kind of sad that has to exist. That should go without saying. Do you get what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I think that in our nation... It's good that we have things like these to increase the amount of equality we have, but these have to be things that we as Americans decide for ourselves, and we're not prompted by any government to do so.
Yeah, I think in 2020, it's upsetting to know that we have to be prompted, or that we have to, like, that we even have to have this discussion of, You know, well, race, you know, do we have to accept a certain amount of, you know, them people, those people? Do we, like, what's the deal here? I feel like it should just be like, oh, cool, like, your name's whatever. What are your qualifications? And that's it. I feel like that's where the discussion should end. I think that the fact that we have something like affirmative action goes to show that we still have a lot of progress to make in America. You know, Matt Ryan earlier today, he was talking about how the fact that he's not able to that he won't be able to necessarily understand how African Americans feel in the country because of the color of his skin. And he mentioned that the fact that he's white only goes to show how much progress we have to make. You know, he feels like he should be able to relate to African Americans because he's a human, you know?
Right. Right. Absolutely. And I think on the topic of diversity, on the topic of progress, on the topic of acceptance, I think we should move on to a topic that has, you know, been recently brought up because the month is June. We are I'm excited to announce that we're in Pride Month, and I think that it goes without saying that Black queers are being misrepresented and underrepresented in a very high fashion. We saw Kamala Harris and companies such as Spotify use their platforms to kind of and really advocate for Black queers to be recognized on the national scale. How do you feel about this movement in coming Black Lives Matter and Pride Month together, Damian?
I feel like we should incorporate everyone together. You know, I don't agree. I don't agree with the All Lives Matter stance on the fact that it's a counter argument to Black Lives Matter. It's like, yeah, we know all lives matter, but like you guys are forgetting about Black Lives Matter. Yeah, exactly. I agree on the stance that all lives do matter, but I don't feel like it should be used to say, stop saying Black Lives Matter, all lives matter. You have to the protest. So I kind of feel like everyone should be coming together right now. I don't care, you know, color, creed, sexual orientation. I don't care. I feel like we should use, I feel like the best way to use the political environment, George, death of others right now, is for all of us to come together. We should uplift queers, as you were saying. We should uplift Hispanics. We should uplift Asians. Everyone should use this time to uplift everyone right now. Obviously, I don't want to take away from Pride Month, but I think that it's amazing what Spotify is doing. I think that everyone should just be trying to push for everyone to be treated equally, everyone to be on the level playing field. What do you think, Brew?
I agree. Completely, absolutely. I think that as a nation, we should be committed to promoting equality over everything. And I think whoever our next president is, I think he or she should represent the American people, every single person in our nation, no matter what creed, what origin, what religion, what race that person is in. He or she should be represented on the national scale. And the politicians that are doing so are being supported and represented in a very, very high manner. You know, you saw Nancy Pelosi, who is a very, very high advocate of Black Lives Matter of the LGBTQ movement, walking through crowds of protesters, and Joe Biden for that matter, walking through crowds of protesters without being attacked, without being harassed. The fact that our president has to move and tear gas and flash bomb protesters to get them out of the way so he can walk through that crowd is surprising, because these people can walk through because they are respected and they have fought for the American people as individuals. What are your thoughts on that, Nancy Pelosi and Trump, the contrast there?
So I think my thoughts are going to be a little bit different here. I think, and not necessarily different, I agree with what you're saying. I think that it comes from a level of respect, but I want to offer a different perspective onto it. You have people coming out and saying that Donald Trump is, you know, General Mattis said that he was the first president in his lifetime that he's ever seen try to, like, openly divide people or try to not bring people together. I think that's what he said. Try to not bring people together. You have, you know, as flawed as the Stanford prison experiment was, it kind of goes to show what the president is doing right now. I think what's being created in his head is an us versus them mentality. You had Joe Rogan talk about this on one of his podcast episodes. He talks about when he was a security guard, Instantly, he started to develop an us versus them mentality. It's, we're the security guards, they're the people. They're the people that are coming. We're better than them, they have to listen to us. And I think that you kind of see that happening with Donald Trump. I'm the president, they're the American citizens. They have to listen to me. And I think that that's wrong. I think that he's starting to create a me versus them mentality, if you understand what I'm saying.
I do. And I think that there's two things that Trump is creating in our nation that is dividing our nation more than ever. I think number one, it's me versus them. Me as the president versus the American people, which shouldn't be that way. The president is put in office to support the American people, not be against them and not to be scared or in more power than he is a servant of the people.
Exactly.
And not the other way around. We are not supporting him. He is supporting us. And I think that the other thing that I was going to mention is the fact that Trump is trying to divide our nation by using his rhetoric. And the other thing that General Mattis talked about profusely in his disc was that Trump, in his rhetoric, is trying to divide our nation. Us versus them also applies to African Americans versus Caucasian people. These versus Caucasian people. I think he is trying to uphold within his rhetoric and what he's trying to draw attention towards, not the people who are protesting against the issue today, but the people who are rioting, the few that are rioting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you saw, I don't know if you remember seeing this, but like when he was talking about his base, you know, MAGA, he was like, MAGA loves black people. It's an interesting statement to say. It's like MAGA is black people. I hope he knows that as the president, he has African-American supporters. It's not MAGA plus, you know, African-Americans. It's not like a collaboration. It's not like when Louis Vuitton does something with Kanye. It's, they're the same thing. Like MAGA, the MAGA base is African, you know, to an extent. You have African-Americans in the MAGA base. Why are you trying to categorize them? Why are you trying to separate them? I talked about this in the last episode. It's not nice to hear, how do we get the black vote? How do we get the Hispanic vote? We should hear, how do we get the American vote? And to hear the president come out and say, you know, I guess MAGA likes black people too. It's interesting. What are your thoughts?
You know, maybe MAGA is black people. MAGA is Hispanic people. MAGA is Indian people. MAGA is Asian people. MAGA is all people. And I think that the president should not discriminate within his own voter base and say, you know, MAGA supports African-Americans. Yes, it's valiant. But as a president, you should be going out and say, you know what? We have to fix the issues that have gone wrong today. And not just support African-Americans, but to place real and hard legislation behind African-Americans to clean up the issues today. And going back to that, I was going to mention a point that I've been actually mentioned today, but it was on my notes for today's podcast. I'm looking for it right now. It's called the Eight Can't Wait Movement. And it has been pushed forth by Campaign Zero as a movement which has been calling for people to contact their states and their vicinities to pass eight different pieces of legislation on the topic of decreasing police brutality. And I'm going to look at it right now. These actions are to ban chokeholds and strangleholds from police officers, de-escalation before any conflict, require warning before shooting, exhaust all other means before shooting, to have a duty to intervene, and to ban shooting at a moving vehicle, and two other things in this list of recommendations for cities. And I think that it is validated. That's the legislation we need to have today, and not just MAGA supports black people, but MAGA supports eight can't wait. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I'd have to look at the legislation being offered, because obviously there's always a counter to every legislation, but I think that's a great idea. I think it's a great idea that if you're an American, that you advocate for legislation that you think should be in place. I think that it's your right. I think that beyond your right, I think that it's your duty to advocate for changes that you want to see in America. I don't know if you recall Andrew Yang. He had a proposal that every police officer should be at least a purple belt in jiu-jitsu. And I don't know if people are familiar here with the art of jiu-jitsu, but it's sort of like wrestling in a sense, but it gives you, his argument for it was the fact that it gives you the opportunity to fight with your body and to be able to manipulate the human body in a way where you don't have to put your knee on their neck. I mean, that's something that's frowned upon in jiu-jitsu. So, you know, you could do a leg sweep. You could hold them in different ways. You know, you understand the human body a little bit more. What do you think about that? What do you think about the purple belt in specific?
You know what? I think it is. I know you're a big Yang supporter. He didn't say that he would make, but it did say it would make us all safer.
You were cutting out real quick. Can you repeat that?
Right. So I think that he didn't say that it was required for police officers to be belts in jiu-jitsu, but he said it would be safe.
Yeah.
For all of us police officers to be trained in jiu-jitsu. I think he makes a valid point. I think we as police officers and these police officers in America are trained to be brutal towards citizens by their predecessors and by the issues and by the, we should train them to be passive, and it also trains their mind, that kind of art, and it makes fighting and strangling, kind of like haggling with other people, and an art of persuasion rather than brutality.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's almost a language when you start to get into these martial arts. It becomes a language that you speak with your body and not necessarily with your voice. And I think that if you really gave it to police officers to be able to speak that language in instances where it's, you know, necessary. I also thinking about the fact that what if, you know, the police field, it's a hard field. It's very, very difficult. I mean, you don't know which traffic stop is going to be a guy that has an arrest warrant and he's going to pull a gun on you. You don't know which call it's going to be the one that gets you shot, that you might not come home to see your wife. It's a very high-intensity job, and I think that you don't want to take away options from police. I don't want to see, you know, I have a fear that maybe certain circumstances where you can justify the use for the force that the officer did use, where you have those officers getting fired. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think that maybe, you know, like how you have cancel culture? Cancel culture is becoming toxic because now every little thing that a person does wrong, they're being called out on. Do you think that maybe that can happen with police officers where they say, you know, oh, why'd you hit that person with your baton? Why'd you do this? Why'd you do that? Where you start critiquing every little thing police officers do and then they start getting fired for it?
You know what? It is a point that I haven't thought of. And I think that, Damien, it's a very valid point because it can happen. Officers are obviously becoming more conscious about their duties because anything they do can be taken the wrong way. And not to say that what happened before was taken the wrong way. I think it was taken the right way, the exact opposite of that. But I think that people, if this keeps happening, may judge police officers for everything they have done more than they deserve, and cancel culture may become widespread. But along the topic of speaking your voice, we have a couple of minutes left in our podcast today, and I think that one of the points that we haven't brought up that needs to be talked about is the little black screens that were popping up on all of our social media pages over the past couple of days. This podcast is about social media and how social media has primarily influenced the political stage and the political field. So I wanted to ask, what are your thoughts on the social media movement of Blackout Tuesday?
Well, I think that it was something that was very empowering to see so many people take part in. I think that it gave opportunity to those who, you know, might be immunosuppressed, those who might have kids at home so they can't go out and protest. I think that it was a wonderful thing to see happen. It's a good thing for our culture, especially because you can reach so many more people on social media. I don't necessarily know what, you know, the impact that it had. It'll have to be determined in the weeks that follow. But I think that it was something that was just nice to see. And I think that maybe, you know, it might not be remembered in history books. It might not be written down with the riots. But it was something that it was just kind of a breath of fresh air where you just saw everyone kind of take a break and support African-American people and kind of create a positive atmosphere away from the news, away from this or that, and kind of just, you know, take a breath, relax, look at other things, you know, live your life.
Yeah, I think we saw every profile on our feeds come together. And it showed, in my opinion, I've never seen this spoken about on any other news channel or podcast, but it showed that we're all fighting for one thing. And there is no division between us over what we think for the most part on social media pages. And I think it shows how many people are supporting the Black Lives Matter movement and our African-American counterparts. But I do think that many people who are against posting these black squares on their social media pages did have some sort of reasoning behind it, which was valid. Speaking of the devil's advocate here, I think a lot of people said that doing that kind of makes it into a social media trend and not what it really – doesn't really do justice to the entire BLM movement. I think because a lot of people did not do anything but post these black squares, and me, our Twitter did have a Blackout Tuesday black square on it. To talk about how this movement is valid. But I think that people who are just posting these black squares and not going out petitioning and calling people up and donating money, who are just doing this one thing, are not doing the right thing.
I'm going to disagree with you a little bit. I think that they're doing the right thing. I think that they're doing the wrong thing if they're going out and say, I'm a part of, this whole movement now. Like, I think that you shouldn't have posted this. This is something that I thought. You shouldn't have posted this as a means of PR, of publicity. You know, I enjoyed seeing people that I knew were rioting, or not rioting, sorry, that were protesting. I enjoyed seeing them post it and kind of take a break from their protests. And not necessarily a break, but in addition to. I don't know if people are going out and saying, you know, kind of flexing, I think is the right word, flexing the fact that they posted Blackout Tuesday. I don't think that that's the correct way to go with it. I think that I can see where people are coming from if they're saying that it's just a social media trend now. I definitely don't want that to happen with this movement. But I don't think that this movement has the potential of doing that anymore. This is a movement that we've never seen before. I mean, this isn't like the Trayvon Martin case. This isn't like cases that we've seen before. I think we're going on almost 2 weeks now of protesting. And it's right. Not just protests in Minneapolis. It's protests in all 50 states. All 50 states. It's protests in other countries. You have London, you have Spain, you have Australia. You have all these countries protesting Black Lives Matter. I think that this is just another addition to it. I think that if it was looked at as a little breakaway, I think that that's great. I think it's time to kind of pick your signs back up, head outside, and keep going.
Right. It is an empowering message. And to end our podcast today, I wanted to bring up one last point. And this just came to my attention. I was horrified and was saddened by it earlier today when my sister came up to me talking about it. It is the Whiteout Wednesday movement that happened today. I think that it was on social media on some pages, on some people's pages, talking about how we shouldn't just, work about the Black Lives Matter movement, but that we should focus about the Blue Lives Matter movement as a distractor, in my opinion. I think that the Whiteout Wednesday movement was a complete deterrent from the movement that we've been working so hard to advance over these past couple of weeks, and just selfish and motivated by ulterior motives. What are your thoughts on this movement, Damien?
I have weird thoughts on this movement. I'm going to be honest with you, because like I was saying before, I think that we should use this time to uplift everyone. And that does include white people. But I think that this movement is gross in the respect that it's not being used to uplift white people. It's being used to suppress black people. You know, right now, that's like, the best correlation. I know it's a negative, or it's kind of a bad analogy here. But it's like if it was someone's birthday and you crashed their birthday party because, I don't know, someone gave you a high five. It's like, yes, we understand that it's important to you. We understand that you know, white people are amazing too. Everyone's amazing. But at this time, we're trying to create a movement for people that are suppressed. Again, in our last episode, or on the last episode that we had on the podcast, I talked about how Elvis, or I don't know necessarily if I talked about it on the last episode, sorry, but you know, you had Elvis, you have white people for a long time who have taken black culture and made it their own, and who have stolen it, and who have monetarily gained from it. And I think that if you're looking at it like that and you're saying, well, now it's white people's turn on Wednesday, I think that you're ignoring the fact that it's not white people's turn, because it always is white people's turn. Do you get what I'm saying?
I do, and I think the analogy you made was great. I think it is like you're having your birthday party, Damien, and somebody else. I decide to have a birthday party when it's not even my birthday.
Yeah, there you go. And I think that's better.
And I'm a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Take away from the movement that you're having for your birthday, for that matter. And I think that my sister was talking to me about it earlier today. It makes a mockery of the Black Lives Matter movement.
There you go. That's the best way to say it. It's a mockery. It's a mockery. It is.
Right. And I think I have seen the K-pop Legion on Twitter, which is very, very big. They have came out and just posted a bunch of K-pop things, related things on that. Draw away from the whole Whiteout Wednesday. Hashtag. And that said, I think it is 11:23 EDT in Atlanta time, and we should go ahead and end our podcast and wrap it up. From my behalf and on Politeen's behalf, I'd like to thank you all for joining today's party. To me and Damien on the biggest issues today, on the issues that we face over the past couple of days since Monday. And I'd like to call on any of you, if you'd first of all like to follow our Twitter handle is at Politeen Show. And if you'd like to email us, please email us with any suggestions or questions for us about us at politeteenpodcast@gmail.com. And just a call of action for all of you guys. Please continue to protest, whether it's in your mind, virtually, or physically. Please protest in any way you can. Donate in any way you can. And also, we're going to have a on our podcast this Friday, 2 days from now. And I'd like you guys to all tweet to us, email us, or contact us in any way, shape, or form with regards to any people that you would like to appear on our show, and we'll contact them via that manner. And also, Damien and I will be releasing a form to apply to be one of our bloggers on our blog soon, and a graphic designer for our campaign, our initiative, the next week after this podcast. So a couple of action items for you guys. Damien, would you like to continue upon that?
Yeah, so be sure to tune in this Friday. It's going to be a very interesting episode. Like Varun said, so I think we want to come out publicly with plan to be our schedule. We hope to release 1 hour segment podcasts as of right now on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays around this time, around 9 p.m., 10 p.m. So be sure to tune in once again every Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Thank you all for listening to today's segment of Politeen. We appreciate the overwhelming support that we've received over the past couple of weeks. It truly means the world. Damien and I would like to encourage any and all of our viewers to follow us on Twitter at Politeen Show right now and to connect with us via this platform. Happy Wednesday, y'all.